Start the show. Let's just find out, Greg Wyshynski, who starts first. Let's just find out, shall we? Let's just find out.
Now, if you are asking who starts first, does that mean you technically started first, or are we still waiting for someone to actually start first?
I was just kind of spooling there. That was my brain just spooling a little bit, saying things over and over again. So I don't know if
you were a spinny disc, if you will, in your head. And now we're going to start the show.
In my day, we had records, and every now and then they would skip. And that's kind of what the beginning of the podcast was right there. Okay, I got a question.
Please, go ahead.
On Puck Soup, you guys took questions. And on MVSW, yeah. I just saw your tweet, we're taking questions.
Uh-huh.
What do you think the difference will be?
I think the difference will be maybe the ones we get now will be more hockey related than is Star Wars a sandwich?
Is Star Wars is Star Trek a soup?
I actually wanted to start the show by telling you I have some horrible news to tell you. It's not only horrible news for you, but for the Dallas Stars.
Oh, they don't have a goalie?
Henrik Lundqvist has a full no move. I saw it on General Manager today. Yeah. Well, have to convince him to leave. I don't know if he'll do that.
I would kind of think that if I was Henrik Lundqvist, I'd be reading the tea leaves here and saying to myself, okay, the Rangers have to untie a Gordian knot here. I'm not going to win a Stanley Cup here. I'm not getting any younger. What other team might need me? What other team might be close to contending for a Stanley Cup in the next couple of years? And maybe I want to go there. I never said that this would be a request from the Rangers. I'm saying from Henrik Lundqvist's point of view,
mm-hmm.
that he would want to go. I don't know. Call me crazy. Henrik Lundqvist is going to say all the right things. We believe here. We're committed here. Rangers, blah, blah, blah. Win Stanley Cup. All that. But we all know the window's closed.
Mm-hmm.
Have a look at that blue line. Have a look at Have a look at some of the contracts. Listen. Have a look at some of the zero prospects they have coming.
There are no... There's no John McEnroe in Dallas. That's strike one. There's no fashion or model parties in Dallas, I'm assuming, strike two. And he has a no-move clause.
When have we ever seen a Swedish hockey player refuse to waive a no-move clause to go to a contender to help his team? I can't even say it. Matt Sundin. Let me just say that then.
We'll get to the debacle that was game seven in a second, but the remedy for this thing is pretty obvious. Matt Murray wins a cup with the Penguins, or at least takes them to the cup final. Kari Lehtinen has 2 years left at like 5.9 or some such. Fleury got a cap hit right around in that neighborhood. He's got 3 years left. You trade Lehtinen to the Penguins, and you have to sweeten the pot, obviously, because you're trading a contract to get a contract. And then you get Fleury, and Fleury's your starting goalie. That's the remedy.
Are we doing hockey call-in radio? Call us up with your trades. here's the thing about the Penguins situation. See, I think it's a great spot right now for Pittsburgh in a lot of ways.
There's a couple of
teams that kind of need a goaltender. Calgary, I'm looking your direction. Calgary with 3 second-round picks this year. What does Calgary have, like 11 picks in the draft this year? Plus prospects, thank you very much. Some players they do need to sign, mind you. Mm-hmm. Dallas, I would imagine that goalie market is open. Although, man, that's a tough one to unravel, right? I mean, you're getting Kari Lehtinen and Corey Crawford money. Who's touching that? For two more years, like really? Who's touching that?
Well,
and then you bring in Antti Niemi. Who who probably should have started the entire time. I know Lehtinen had that, insane game six where he stopped all the pucks. But when you look back at it, and listen, I'm no Antti Niemi guy on record going back to 2010, but he was probably the better option the whole time.
Well, look, we've spent many, many minutes on this podcast filleting Jim Nill. Let's be honest here. The plan was to have two guys in the regular season because of the travel considerations, because he thought that was a way to keep them both fresh. The two-headed monster was a regular season solution. And you know what? It got you the 21st or 22nd best goals against average in the NHL, which was good enough to have the record that the Stars had because their offense was that good. But when it comes to the playoffs, that plan was terrible. That plan didn't work. And I know people point to other situations. They're like, but other teams have two goalies. Look, the Blues have two goalies. Yeah, that's true. But they don't do it for travel considerations. They do it because Jake Allen is the future starter and Brian Elliott has flashes of brilliance and he's carried them in this postseason. Neither Niemi nor Carey Lehtinen I would put faith in as much as I put faith in either Allen or Elliott.
Here's the difference. I'll tell you exactly what the difference is between St. Louis and Dallas. And yes, there are teams that have the two goalie situation and they end up flip-flopping back and forth. But here's the difference. In St. Louis, it's been made clear someone needs to grab the number one spot. This
right.
is a competition. In Dallas, it's there because they want 41 games each. They want each
yeah.
goaltender. They want the goaltenders to split the season because of travel considerations, and perhaps one of the goaltenders kind of gets a little bit tired and is occasionally injury prone. That's the difference. I don't get any sense, nor does anyone. Like, no one has told me this is a goalie competition in Dallas for someone to grab it. All along, it's been our plan is to platoon. There is no competition. There is just comfort with those two goaltenders.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And then that's how you end up losing a game seven. 6-1.
Did you see when they cut back to Lindy after the third goal, which probably should have been the fourth goal if it weren't for our great friend, the coach's challenge offside? Did you
yeah.
see the look on his face? Like,
oh,
after
my God.
All we did, you're letting that in? After
yeah.
everything we've gone through, after yeah, all that of in. That, you're letting mm-hmm. that in.
The other difference
you're
between St. Louis... The other difference between St. Louis and Dallas, obviously, is, Pietrangelo, Shattenkirk,
Parayko,
Bomeister,
Parayko.
And that's the other part of this equation, too, is that as bad as the goaltending was, the blue line wasn't any good either. And Chris Russell was terrible. Demers was exposed. Goligoski's a UFA, so you figure yeah. there's a decision to be made there if they haven't re-signed him yet. So Demers, Russell, and Goligoski are all UFA. So the question that becomes, who do you keep? Do you jettison all three? And if you do you then turn some of those blue line spots over to the younger players, or do you look for veteran solutions in front of whatever goalie is going to be there next year that's not going to be Carey Lehtinen or Antti Niemi?
I think I think the expectation is that Jamie Oleksiak takes that next step, although
You'd
there are
hope
many
so.
People that have told me that that is not going to happen. I think you.
Oh wait, so, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm sorry. Jordy Benn also UFA. Don't want to leave out Jordy.
Oh, is Jordy Benn UFA as well? Okay, so
I
mean he's a little bit older though too. and you hope that someone like Julius Honka, a former first round draft pick, is potentially ready to go and mm-hmm. ready to crack that lineup. But then again, you need some help on the blue line.
Yeah,
you do.
Honka's 20.
There's just no way around it. You need
yeah.
help on the blue line.
Yeah. What? But your priority should be blue line or goal. What do you think?
I think if you can get a goaltender, like if you can do something to pry away the Ranger or the Penguin, I think you do it.
See, but so
I think it's all what's available, right?
Yeah, that's the question. What's available? Because I mean, you're going to have some options on the UFA market. You're going to have Freddie Anderson. You're going to have Cam Ward. For what it's worth.
I wonder if he goes to Calgary.
Who?
A Western
Cam
Canadian
or,
guy.
Or Freddie?
Cam Ward. Well, both, really. I think everyone's already married Freddie Anderson to Calgary Flames.
You have your Reimer. That's about it, though.
You do realize we could have Reimer versus Kessel in the Stanley Cup final.
I know, and it would be perfect if it was Kessel scoring
so
on Reimer
awesome.
For the game winner. The whole thing with so the great. Whole world would Maple Leafs fans would take 2 seconds away from reading the Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine scouting reports to look up and say, "Oh, look, the Cup Finals going
yeah,
on."
If that happened, I would not do a podcast for about a week. I would just let Steve Dangle dominate it. Just let Steve Dangle completely dominate the podcast for a while. You know what? Anything we're gonna do, Steve's gonna do better.
They'd have to go through the trade market. For a solution, they'd have to.
Yeah, that's the one place though that you don't find the trades, and now it's dried up even more with Travis Hamonic saying, "You know what? I'm cool. I'm staying."
The thing that's crazy about this whole situation is that usually when teams are platooning goalies, it's because they're trying to do it on the cheap, you know?
Oh, not here.
Yeah, they got $9 million tied up in their goalies. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's
not
a here. It's a miracle they made it this far, honestly. It's a miracle they made it this far.
Or you're platooning because you want that, you know, you want the older guy to groom the kid.
Yeah.
Right? These guys are both in their early 30s.
Right?
It didn't work. It didn't work, and it's expensive.
But I'll tell you right now, like, it's okay that it didn't work. You know, I wrote about this today on Puck Daddy. Like, you heard the crowd at the end of that game, a game that was, without question, one of the single worst losses in a Game 7 that we've ever seen, of walking this plane of existence. And the fans, you know, whipped their towels around and gave them a cheer and was hooting and hollering, the fans that remained in that building. And that's great. But you know what that also is? That's when you know your franchise is in participation ribbon mode. That's when you know your franchise is in everybody gets a gold star and a check plus on their test mode. That's not a championship mode quite yet, because you don't get reamed, curb stomped in a game 7 and respond like that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They got that to a game 7. Like, think about this for 1 second. They got through a round of playoffs, and they went to game 7 of the second round. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's more of a reflection of the Dallas Stars or a reflection of the St. Louis Blues. Depends how you look at the series. But at the end of all of this, they got to the second round and got to a game 7. Like, wasn't this – this was found money playoffs for the Dallas Stars. This was, hey, we're in. Great. Hey, we won a round. That's even better. Hey, we're in game 7 of the second round. This is frickin' awesome. And all those young players got all that experience. And, oh, by the way, they did it all without Tyler Seguin. They did it all without their number one centerman. I don't know. I see it as a great season for the Dallas Stars.
It was,
'cause I don't think anybody expected them to win the Stanley Cup. This was a wonderful season for them. Did it end horribly? Of course it did. It was earth-shattering. It was destroying, and a lot of the holes in the lineup became pretty exposed. But still, they got there, they won around, and they got the game 7.
They did amazing stuff. They should be very proud. And they did great up until the point where their goalie saw more rubber fly by him than someone sitting in the infield at the Daytona 500. All right, who do the Blues match up best against? The Sharkies or the Predatorials?
Ooh.
Now, keep in mind, here's the thing. They handled the Predators pretty good in the regular season. I think they were like 4-1 against them in the regular season. They were 1-2 against the Sharks and did not play very well.
We had Ken Hitchcock on Hockey Central at noon today, and he brought up a great point. My first question to him was, what was the difference between coaching against Chicago versus coaching against Dallas? And he said Dallas was tougher because they were unpredictable. Like, Chicago is very efficient and deliberate, and you know what they're doing. They just tend to do it better than you, right? Mm-hmm. He loved teams like that. Hey, here's how we're going to play, guys. See if you can beat us. He said that Dallas was more unpredictable coming at you out of their own zone. And I kind of see San Jose and Nashville as more similar than different. So I don't know how much there is really to choose between the one or the other, outside of the fact that Nashville has the all-world defense.
They do.
I don't know,
that's
man.
True.
I don't. To be honest with you, I don't think they match up well against either of them. I think whoever wins that Nashville San Jose series is going to the Stanley Cup final.
Ooh, I think they could beat the Preds. If I had to make a pick, I would pick the Blues in 7 over Nashville, but I think they lose to the Sharks. I'll say this about the Blues, man.
Why do you think they lose to the Preds?
Oh, no. I think they beat the Preds in 7.
Why do you think they beat the Preds?
I think the Blues are a really good – I think the Blues are going to beat them 5-on-5, and I have no faith in the Predators' special teams, specifically the power play, to make up the difference.
That blue line's really good, man. And that –
I know it is, and Peck has been pretty good, except for – I thought he did not play very well in Game 6, but – I think, you know, I feel like the Blues have their number, man. They can beat this team. I don't think they're going to go into this series worried about it. I think travel's not a consideration for them at all in this thing, too. And I just think top to bottom right now, the Blues are playing better than the Predators are.
Well, we'll see who they get tonight. The one thing I would like to see if it ends up being Blues and Preds is just how physical they want to make it. Now, I'm not talking about, is Mike Rivero going to go throw it around? You know, Victor Arvidsson going to go? No, I don't think that. But Paul Gostad, Mikko Salomaki, like if you just look for that game within a game, those are the guys. And, Salomaki is a little cannonball out there.
Boy, isn't he, though? And let's not forget the high dickhead quotient in this series as well with James Neal and David Backes and Troy Brower and all that other stuff that could happen,
high
too.
High dickhead quotients. Your Honor, what my client is trying to say is there are some intense players on either side.
Yeah, you know, if you want to, you know, put a fine point on it, sure. Well, so you think the Sharks or the Preds, either the Sharks or the Preds knock out the Blues?
I do. Dude, Dallas took him to 7 games with no Tyler Seguin and 2 bad goaltenders.
Oh, that's true.
Here comes, you know, three really good centermen, an outstanding goaltender, and an all-world defense.
I felt so good for Brian Elliott last night, by the way, because it was a game.
Me too.
You know, he's coming off a terrible game 6, comes back, and then, lo and behold, just set up a lawn chair. Vacation, all I ever wanted. It just, the game's over. The first period.
Well, just like game 6, but it was over the other way. And Brian Elliott's screaming down the hallway, smashing sticks. I've said this before on the podcast. I feel good for the guy. He's been, you know, false started so many different times, had a really bad experience in Ottawa. How many times have they tried to put a goaltender in front of him in St. Louis? Like, go ahead and count them. It's almost endless, the amount of goaltender. I compared it to Jim Rutherford, I think, on the last podcast, and it's true. Like, they haven't really showed a whole lot of faith in Brian Elliott, and he keeps on proving them wrong. To me, this is one of the great stories of this year's playoffs. How Brian Elliott, you know, think of all the goaltenders they've gone through, Halak and Ryan Miller, all of them. Brian Elliott, last man. They've tried to give it to Jake Allen countless times. Last man standing right now, Brian Elliott. You have to love that story.
For sure.
Gotta love that goalie. Yep.
All right. When's Colby coming on, by the way? Nowish?
4:30.
I don't know.
All right. 4:30? We got time. Sammy said 4:30, so that we got. Yeah, we got time to then do an intro thingy. That's always exciting. And I think Sam, now that we've handicapped the Western Conference as expertly as we do, it's time to start the show proper, shall we? Oh my God. My God, that's Triple H music!
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Why not just call it the Guy Who Played the Game podcast and just cut out the middleman?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Can I play the guy who's never been a broadcaster before card then?
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Look. I am as open-minded and all in on analytics as anybody, but I gotta tell you, man, I have such a headache today.
Why?
I have a headache when people write things like Evgeny Kuznetsov was actually really good in their summation of the Penguins Capital series. Listen. I hear you on shot attempts. I hear you on all of it. I understand. He wasn't a liability, but there's a big difference between not being a liability and being, quote, really good. And when you're the leading scorer on your team, and when you're, I believe it was fourth in the league or third in the league in even strength points, and you don't get an even strength point in the playoffs in 12 games, and you get one goal and one assist in 12 games and 1 point in the semifinal round. Pardon me for a second. There is no goddamn way he was really good in the playoffs.
Yeah, I just had a cold spell. Get a bad.
Come on, man. Look.
Had a bad dozen
I get
games.
It. Like Capitals fans are so conditioned to explain away bad performances that I understand what they're doing here. And listen, this isn't trade Kuznetsov. This isn't Kuznetsov's a bad player. He was great last postseason. That's why we all thought he would be great this postseason. But if the crux of your argument about the Penguins series is that it was one bounce here or there, one goal here or there, it's a one-goal series, one goal separated them literally in Game 6 and literally in the entire series, and you're going to just give Kuznetsov a pass because he had a lot of shot attempts, you're out of your minds. What are you doing? He had 2 points on special teams in 12 games. He had no points at even strength in 12 games. He was your leading scorer. There's absolutely no justification for this. It was a bad playoff for him.
Yeah, he didn't do good. He didn't do good. But the window, because I'm with you, I'm not like, oh, this is like an Alexander Semin thing. Like, hey, the underlying numbers are great, but it's just not happening for him in Montreal playing on that third line. They need to bump him up. And, you know, once they part ways with him, nobody else wants him in the NHL. I don't think it's that. I think this is just another young player, not unlike Andrei Burakovsky. This is like Andrei Burakovsky, dude.
Yeah.
This means this guy who's just a couple years older with a little bit more experience than Andrei Burakovsky. That's it. And next year, all expectations are Evgeny Kuznetsov will be a better player. Better in the regular season, maybe. But playoffs, I would suspect so.
And so the argument then becomes, well, he struggled because his line mates' shooting percentages cratered in 12 games. Okay, fine, sure. If that's the case, then I guess we pass the blame to who? Barry Trotz for not getting his leading scorer in the regular season better offensive chances and opportunities in 12 games? No even strength points in 12 games. We're going to give this guy a pass.
What do you think, Brian McClellan?
I know Capitals fans' expectations for their teams and their players are tempered, but come on now. What is he going to do there? Yeah. He's going to get let's touch on the series. I think the Capitals might have a speed deficit, but it's hard to say because the Penguins are really, like, abnormally fast. And especially that Kessel line, like abnormally fast. I think the Capitals have to really re-examine their blue line, though. I know Orpik said he had a concussion and a fractured whatever, and that's why he was what he was, and Alzner was banged up, and he was what he was.
Had a bad playoffs. Yeah.
Sure, exactly. Well, no, he had bad line mates. So
John Carlson?
I think you have to you have to re-examine the depth on defense a little bit and try to figure out something there, because that was a weakest link, I thought, for them in the Penguins series.
Here's a question that I don't think I've asked a Caps fan, but I'm going to now. If you are Brian McClellan, and you know this window is still very much open, and you know you have Braden Holtby, who will probably win the Vezina Trophy this year, and you're looking to maybe add another center to replace Mike Richards, and to Greg's point, you want to do something more with your blue line, and you need to do it now, would you trade Ilya Samsonov?
Oof.
Right?
I don't see why you wouldn't trade Ilya Samsonov. Because, I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't. Like, well, unless you're thinking at some point, like, the mantle will be passed and Holtby's value will be so off the charts that you'll get something great for him down the road. I don't know. That's a good question.
Like, there's some really good young goaltenders on the horizon. Ilya Samsonov is one.
Matt Murray.
Well, I mean, Tampa's going to have to make their decision as well. You know, by the time the expansion draft rolls around, like, I wonder about that. Would the Washington Capitals trade Ilya Samsonov?
That Vegas team is going to be all right. That Vegas team is going to get a good goalie, and it's going to have the
They're setting it up good.
They're going to have the fourth best defenseman from the top 10 teams in the league from each of them.
And you know what? The story within a story. I'm looking at West Point versus West Point. Two West Point guys, Foley and Biola.
You love that West Point, Florida stuff.
The battle of West Point. Oh, it's intoxicating. It's catnip for me. But here comes Bill Foley. Hey, how about this one? Bill Foley takes Dale Talon as his general manager. Da, 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 da.
Dun, 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 dun. What did you make the unprecedented 3 delay of game penalties in the third period for the Penguins?
You know what I thought about? I thought about Daniel Briere and Matt Duchene. That's exactly what I thought about. because I thought to myself, okay, here comes the overreaction. How can we let something like this decide a series? Much like the Daniel Beer offside in Pittsburgh, the Matt Duchene offside in Nashville led to the video review on the blue line. I thought to myself, someone is going to stand up at one of these meetings and say, we had three over-the-glass penalties in a row. It allowed the Washington Capitals to get back into this game. We let this goofy penalty get a team back in there and almost cost another team the game, if not the series, should they lose Game 7. We need to do something about this. When really, it's a freak of nature. If you're going to have this rule, things like this are going to happen. But that's where I went with it. I went Briere and Duchene on it. Like, are we going to try to fix a problem that's really not there? I just kind of saw it as a freak. I felt bad for the Bonino one. The Bonino one is the one that I really felt bad for. But whatever. What'd you think?
I think I agree with the Bonino one. That's the one I had a problem with because I think this. Because there was a moment a few minutes later where one of the Capitals players had the puck kind of go off his skate and go over the glass. I think there are ways to mask it. I've seen players angle their bodies to try to get the puck over the glass and have it bounce off them and stuff. Like, I think there's ways to cheat the rule. And the one thing I think there needs to be in that rule is more subjectivity. I don't like the idea of it being black and white. It's stupid. Like, I've used this example before. I was at a Capitals game once where Matt Cook shot the puck from behind the opposite goal line over the glass on the other end of the ice, and it was delay a game.
I've seen that before. It's dope.
Because like that's what he was intending to do, right? not send it down for an icing. So I want there to be more oversight. I want there to be more subjectivity in the call. The Bonino one to me was a classic example of that. I don't think he's trying to put that puck over the glass. The other two were fine.
I don't
fine.
Think so. Well, why don't we ask an ex-player who probably did it himself a few times. Hello, Colby Armstrong.
Hey, what's going on?
Colby, let me ask you point blank. How many times did you fire the puck over the glass, and how many times was it deliberate?
I can honestly tell you. Honestly, swear to God, I'm pretty sure some nerd can go Google it, but
like
never,
me?
I never did it.
Never?
I swear to God, never did it.
I don't know.
You know,
Colby.
Colby, that reminds me, I remember talking to Craig Adams once, and I asked him about diving. And Craig Adams swore to me up and down. Yeah. Adam said he never took a dive. Adam said he never embellished. I would never embellish, he said.
He may have never. You know, it's funny you bring up his name. He used to rent my house. Now I'm back into my house in Pittsburgh. He was a pretty honest player. I got to admit, he's a pretty honest player. But my old tenant, that's kind of funny.
But here's the thing. Okay, maybe it was all about the way that you framed the question, though, Greg. If you would have asked him, have you ever embellished, not dived, but embellished, which is essentially a classier way of saying diving, what do you think the answer would have been? Because all players do it, right? I mean, come on. We're all grown-ups.
You guys are terrible at it. That's the problem with diving. Like, if you're going to dive, be better at diving.
That's right.
Thank you. The whole thing is, it's just a matter of how good you are. Everybody does it. Just some guys are better at disguising it.
Colby, speaking of the Penguins, they just won a playoff series against the Washington Capitals in which Sidney Crosby didn't have a goal, Evgeny Malkin didn't have a point for four straight games, and with a rookie goalie. Surprised?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know. It was a close series for sure. I thought they, they started the series off with the matchup with the Backstrom line against Sid's line, which I thought was the mismatch and good for Washington with, Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie against Sidney and Sheary and Hornquist. I thought, that was if you want to talk about going, I guess they were saying power with power, but what Pittsburgh has is four lines that can all score. And big time threats on every line with Kessel, with that Bonino line and Hägglund, who obviously stole the show, and then Malkin on the second line and Sid on the first line. So it's like pick your poison. Like you want to get your D matchups up against certain guys, and I think near the end of the series they tried to get a few guys out against them, and Alsner and other guys, and he got hurt in the last game, which I think was huge, but. They tried to get their matchups, and it's tough against the Penguins. I tell you, pick your poison with them and with their speed and the way they can skate. They made it really tough on them.
Let's talk about that speed in the Bonino line as well. Mike Sullivan refers to it as a space play. You can call it an area pass, whatever. But Sullivan did this with Tortorella in New York with Hagelin, where they wouldn't put the puck. Like he'd be on the rush, and they wouldn't hit him with a pass. They'd put the puck just ahead of him and behind the defenseman, and they'd create races. And it almost seems like when I look at the Bonino line, and Kessel's the same way, all they're doing is creating foot races all over the ice, and good luck beating those guys in a foot race.
Oh, seriously, Hagelin, seriously, watching him, a ton this year. I watched him a ton, and you talk about those space plays. It's almost like a safety play, Jeff. Like they just kind of airmail it out, and they know that it's like, literally if he's 20 feet behind the guy, it's going to be a 50-50 battle on the puck up ice, and that's how fast this guy can go. And he's relentless on pucks also, which I think is unique about that line, with Hagelin's speed, and you talk about that flip play, him getting up on the play, and then Bonino kind of reading the play, really smart guy, but, he's not afraid to get in there. He really has a puck on a string when he's playing with confidence as he has down the stretch here, up the middle, just the patience and play on the puck, and Phil's very good at finding little holes off to the side and off to the weak side, and obviously streaking down the wing with that shot as we saw in the last game the other night. So it's kind of like a mismatch of all three different guys kind of bringing something unique and different, and individual skill wise to complement each other. So it's a good mix, and I think a comfortable feeling for all of them to play together like that.
Let me ask you about that. That's an interesting line as well, because it's all players that were traded. Hagelin comes in from Anaheim. Bonino comes in from Vancouver. Kessel comes in from Toronto. So it's not as if, these guys have played with each other for a long time, played in Wilkes-Barre for a bunch and then graduated to the NHL. Is that, like, when you're at that elite level, Colby, is that tough to find that right away? Or do things just like, oh, man, look at this Rubik's Cube, all the sides match up? Like, does it just, like, click automatically? Or, like, how long does it normally take something like that to work?
Yeah, sometimes it just clicks. Sometimes, as a team, or, you can see in practice. I know in practice, some guys are easier to play with. For other guys, it's difficult. But, in practice, you could see some guys are on a different line. But then they get together in a drill, like a two-on-two drill or something, you can see something, you're like, wow, these guys, and then like a couple weeks go by and you can still see, even as a player, you're like, wow, Johnny and Rick are sick together on two-on-twos, holy smokes. And then eventually they get together on a line like halfway through the season and it just lights out those two, And it's, it just takes time sometimes for lines to match up or to work out, for, certain players to get healthy or certain players to get picked up. It's incredible how chemistry can work and sometimes how it can't work. And there's much to be made also here in Pittsburgh about Malkin and Crosby playing together on the same line and how it doesn't work out. And, they love to talk about that. But, I would love to see them play together maybe a little bit more, especially in tighter games. But, like what they've got going on, they've got a good recipe here with their guys. But, man, Rutherford done, a good job with just that line that you mentioned. And then, you look at the back end with Daly, another guy that he picked up in Dumoulin. Like, jeez. Everyone's coming in and contributing that he's picked up.
I got a theory on Kessel I want to run past you. I mean, we all thought he was acquired to play with Sid, and then they wound up playing him with Gino, and he did okay. He didn't do great. And now he's kind of on his own line. And the question I have is, like, when you're on what is technically the third line, but probably not right now, I mean, is there something to be said for not having to have the pressure of playing with Sid or playing with Gino? And just kind of doing your own thing on a line with two guys that don't have that profile.
Yeah, you know what? I criticized Phil a little at the start of the year when he first got traded to Pittsburgh. They asked me what it was like to play with him, and I said at times frustrating. Like just with his battle level, and he was our Sidney Crosby of our team. So you got to understand, he played like 24 minutes, 20 to 22 minutes, whatever it was a night at times. And at times throughout games, it's 82 game season. That wasn't there all the time. I said the good thing about him going to Pittsburgh is he can just play his game. He can play that game where, he can make things happen. He's a great player. He's really good. Like, he creates lots of chances. He can skate. He has a good shot. Because of his speed and skill, he opens it up for other guys. Plus, he has playmaking ability, as we've seen down the stretch and now into the playoffs, where he's making, some great plays. But, you put him in a situation where he comes and sits in the backseat behind Crosby and Malkin, and now he's on his own line with guys that have really meshed together really well, and they've been playing some great hockey. It's the perfect situation for him. And You know, I thought when that happened, I thought it was great for him to see him get into that position where he could just, you know, be himself and play his game and, you know, produce. And I think he wanted to produce, obviously, a little more throughout the year. And I think, you know, I think when Rutherford made a comment openly where they expected Phil to get 30 goals, that was their expectation of Phil when it kind of started to heat up on him. And that's when he kind of, like, just turned a corner and just went nuts down the back half of the season and into the playoffs now. So, yeah, he's a great player, skilled player, makes lots happen. We've seen him. He's a point-of-game player in the playoffs. And, man, has he been a difference.
I have a theory, too. I'm going to bounce this one off you as you play amateur Phil Kessel, Sidney Crosby, psychiatrist here, Colby. Sidney Crosby likes playing a short game. It's a lot of short passes. It's a lot of traffic. It's in tight. He does great when there's bodies around him. I mean, you played with him. Where Phil Kessel likes a long game, a stretch game, a long pass, hit him in stride in the neutral zone, and that's just not Sidney Crosby's game. That's point one. Point two, how accurate is this? Sidney Crosby's a left-hand shot who plays on his backhand more than anybody else in the game. And that's foreign to a lot of guys, and his default is more to the left side than it is to the right side. Am I on base or way off the mark on this one, Colby?
Yeah, you know, I think that's, yeah, I definitely think that's on with, you know, hockey-wise. I'm kind of leaning towards mental. I think mentally we, and it's obviously hard for us to talk about it because lots of guys don't know or lots of guys haven't, you know, been in situations, but I just think mentally also, like, I think your points are great, playing the game, but for Phil, I think mentally, I think it's, you know, like I said, a comfortable fit. When you feel confident and you have confidence, it's quite the thing when you're already an elite player. And, he's in a comfortable position playing behind now two guys that are elite players in the world. I wouldn't say necessarily behind, but you know, they're top three lines. And, you know, it's not the spotlight's not on him, and he can just play his game, and he's found, you know, a comfortability level with those two guys. And I think that says a lot when you're in a spot as a player, needing to play at a high level, and you have all that going for you. I think mentally, you know, take away the backhand, the forehand, whatever it may be, I think it's that's next level. So he goes into every game knowing exactly what to expect, what he has to do with those guys, and feeling good about it. That's such a big difference.
You got any issue with Ovechkin going over to Worlds so quickly after the season's done?
It's kind of expected. I don't know.
Ouch.
If he was on my team, I would just be like, oh, man. Like, you know, you could, I don't know. It's crazy how
yeah, but you know what?
He went
but
over
he,
there for me. But
here's the thing. You know, Colby, can I pause? As Canadians, if someone says no to the World Championships, we roast them in Canada. What, you said no to your country? Like, why should Ovechkin be any different?
Yeah, you know, it's true. It's true in that regard. But I guess for Ovechkin, you know, how many World Championships has he been at? I think 12. Like, you know, enough. It's enough, you know. And I looked at this series. This was the big series for me when I looked at, like, you know, the whole Crosby-Ovechkin battle. And I looked at, never has he been in a better position to knock Crosby off. And yeah, they have a good team. The Penguins do. But never has it been like, you know, this is the year that, you know, Ovechkin's going to rise to the top. And, you know, he played hard and he played good, but he didn't rise above. And I think, you know, obviously Sid was kept in check also. It was a tight series. But, like, you know, this was the team that he had that was the chance to go over. And then he just loses out. He's like, oh, well, let's go, Russia. Do, 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 do. Here we go. Let's go play. Like the next morning, he had his Russian tracksuit on a plane. Unbelievable.
That's funny.
I have a couple
thoughts on that. Like on one hand, I've always wondered whether there is extraordinary like pressure we don't know about for him to play. Like the Russians have ways of making you talk, kind of way.
He is the face of Russian hockey.
And the other thing too, though, is like here's the thing: we always give you know players credit for being able to internalize grief or stress or everything else and go out there and play the game. Like the game is the thing that gets you through life, right? This guy's gotten his heart stomped on and his ass kicked 8 times in his career, never making the conference final. Like, what if going off and playing in Worlds is his process? What if that's how he copes with all of this constant disappointment in Washington is going to play in Worlds and getting a medal?
You know, I don't know what he's thinking with that. you know what? I just think maybe, you know what? I don't know. Like, I'm trying to give him benefit of the doubt. Like, to his home country. I think that's maybe
one of the major
pulling issues. I think that's just what it is. And I'm sure he got some pressure to come back in his home country and put on a good show and have their team win. And it means a lot to them. I mean, I played world championships in Russia also. We won gold medal there, and they lost in the semifinals. And there was, like, we had translators with our group, and we had, you know, people helping us with travel and different things, and, you know, people that we're set up with, you know, the Russian people, and they were crying, like, bawling, crying when their team lost, and they're helping us, and they're wearing Team Canada, like, zip-up jackets, and they were crying when their team lost in the semifinals. Like, these people cared so much. It was an eye-opener for me to go there and just see how much hockey meant to a lot of to everyone there, and, you know, I think, you know, it's a certain amount of pressure there for him, but at the same time, like you know, big deal. Like, it's one tournament. It's, he just got lost in a season where they were supposed to probably win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, the next day he's gone. So, you know, people can take whatever they want from it. But, you know, it's who knows what's driving him.
Colby and I have a big desire in our lives, Wish. It's to create a website called hockeyisfuckingawesome.com, documenting all the great, awesome things that happen in hockey. And every now and then when something great happens, Colby will send me a text, just hockeyisfuckingawesome.com, and I'll send the same thing back to him. So, to that end, Colby Armstrong, I ask you, what's doing it for you these days in the playoffs? Like, what would be your first post on hockeyisfuckingawesome.com right now, today?
Oh, God, good try. I have no clue right now. I know
who your answer is. Who'd you text me about yesterday, dummy? I'm trying to lead you into something here.
Bo Fabbri?
Yeah.
Fabbri, man, that guy's a player. What a player. Yeah, and he was going to get healthy scratch. I was like, this guy's the best player in this series. How smart is this guy? How bad is my memory?
I
see that yesterday.
Dude, it was like, I'll find it right now. I'll tell you the exact time that it happened. Hang on. It happened at exactly 9:40 Eastern.
That was like in the first period of the game when the game was over. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a bad memory. But man, Fabbri was on fire, like quick plays, heads up, passing. Like he was threading needles all over the ice. Speed, he's physical, he digs, he can create. Holy man, what a guy they have right there. He's a good player.
Yeah, they got a lot more scoring depth than I think they've ever had on that team too, which is why they've made it as far as they are. Hey, before you hopped on, we were talking about the West. Who do you think the Blues can beat, either the Preds or the Sharks, or neither the Preds or the Sharks, or what do you think about it?
That's gonna be a heck of a conference final, I think, regardless of who gets in there. But jeez, man, I'm torn on this. After the first round, I was like, San Jose is gonna go to the finals. Holy smokes! And now I'm like, St. Louis. Oh my God, what's going on? Like, I don't know. It's just I gotta give it to San Jose. I like Joe Thornton. I'm a big Joe Thornton guy. So I hope that he gets his due and can go on a run here. But holy man, I don't know. There's some beasts coming out of the West as usual.
Yeah, and I guess.
What about you guys? What do you think?
I like San Jose.
Every time
I say that, I just think about Nashville's defense, and I say, okay, Merrick, shut up.
I know. God, there's just like everything counters everything, right?
Blues over the Preds, Sharks over the Blues. That's how I think it play out. I think the Sharks are better than the Blues.
With the caveat
that Martin Jones, as of this point, at this moment, we don't know what he does tonight, obviously. But Jones scared the shit out of me in Game 6 with the way he played. I was a little bit worried there. But they got Reimer in their pocket, though, if they need him.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice to have James Reimer just sitting in your pocket? That's a sweet little feeling right there. Little James Reimer just sitting there in your pocket.
Not bad, yeah. I'll come in, yeah.
Like the Penguins, they got Fleury sitting there waiting right now. So we'll see what happens there even. Both teams looking good with guys like that sitting there.
Not too shabby. Hey, you know, I was thinking about your Pittsburgh Penguins when you played with the Pens because I was reading some, more sort of altering the game and opening it up and, you know, the idea that going back to the, before they had the Montreal rule on the power play where you serve the full 2 minutes. Now you have offsetting minors. It goes to 4-on-4. And then the Oilers started dining out 4-on-4 in the 80s and just crushing teams. And your Penguin squad, you're like, when you played with the Pens, like when it got to form, you killed guys. Like your 4-on-4 was outstanding. So here's my question to you, Colby Armstrong. How many times would you go out there, Colby Armstrong, just to take someone?
Oh yeah, geez, yeah. I screwed it up one time. I was wanting to take a guy. It was last like 2 minutes of the game, and I wanted to just get a 4-on-4 just so we could pull our goalie and be up on a power play for the end of the game.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is what you're referring to, but I went out and I tried to take a guy with me. I can't remember who it was. I think it was against the Islanders, and I ended up just taking a penalty by myself. I got a little. I'm usually pretty good at that. Like, just sucking a guy in so we each get two for roughing or something. Like, take a couple punches, And next thing I know, I get called for the penalty myself and totally ruined a comeback in the game. But
oh no,
yeah, those are the little games within the game.
So how do you do it? Like, what's your secret for taking a guy? What'll do it every single time?
This used to be my secret. I kind of figured out little tricks, like little rat tricks. But coming in, just drawing a penalty around the net for one is like you just come into a scrum and just start punching guys in the stomach. And hopefully, because, it's not often that a ref will call roughing when you just give a guy a stomach jab.
Right.
So it's, a good way to take a punch in the face, hopefully get a guy over the edge and he punches you in the face. And then you do the head flip back and everything's
nice.
Good. And,
nice.
usually it's just like that. But, it's a constant game of up and down the ice and poking guys and prodding guys and chirping guys. And eventually you can hopefully get him into a situation where you can get him to take a penalty. But,
awesome.
It's a lot of game within the game and it happens all game from the bench, a lot of stuff you don't see on TV, guys coming off for line changes, guys saying stuff, a little push at a guy on a line change, shift after shift after shift. And eventually, you play against those guys enough, it starts wearing on guys. So it's a lot of stuff people don't see, a little gamesmanship out there.
All right, last one for me, Colby. As you know, Jeff and I have never played the game, so I'm going to ask you a question as a guy who played the game. Tell me what's tougher, and tell me if you could do either. Play for a general manager that's younger than you. Play for a coach that's younger than you.
Oh, great question.
Oh, I think playing for a coach that's younger than you.
Can't do or can do. That's tougher.
I think it would be tougher, yeah. It just would be a little bit, on a day-to-day basis, you're with the guy every day in practice. And, when I came to the game in the NHL when I was 22, 23 years old, and just being a rookie in the league with older guys on the team, like, it's kind of a weird hierarchy of, like, veterans to rookies. And I think it's changed over time now. It's a little bit easier now for rookies to come in and belong. I guess I could say, but, I just think as on a day-to-day basis with a younger coach and I just think it would just be a little bit, probably take a while to learn, to earn the respect of some of the older players, I'd imagine, it'd be weird that way.
But you could work for Boy Genius.
That's my initial thoughts.
You could work for Boy Genius, John Chayka in Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, depends how good my analytics are, I guess. Player. If I had crappy analytics, I'd be like, this guy sucks.
That's right. Yeah. If you're like a negative Corsi player, you're like, F that guy and his voodoo.
Yeah, whatever. I don't buy that stuff.
Guy.
Yeah.
Last one. For... Guy. What the heck?
last one here. Colby's joining us for Memorial Cup this year in Red Deer. And as an ex Red Deer Rebel, Memorial Cup champion, what is the thing you're most looking forward to when you get to Red Deer, Colby?
The thing that I'm most looking forward to is to see the arena, the Centrium. I know when I played there, it was just a random like bowl on the lower level and then a couple seats on the top. And I haven't been back there in years to check it out, but I've heard Brent Sutter and the Rebels have completely changed it. They've got this new pro dressing room, and they've got all this new seating and luxury boxes and all this stuff in the rink. So to go back there, it's going to be interesting to see how the rink looks now and what it's changed into. And also, Jeff, to see some of my old alumni that, the guys that we won the Memorial Cup with back in 2001, a bunch of them are going to be there for the opening and a little bit of the fun. So it'll be nice to have a few laughs and get into some old stories, some old hockey stories, and that'll probably be the best and most exciting thing
okay.
for me there. That'd be great.
Okay, this is the real last question then. To the to that oh. end, when I say the name Jim Vandermeer, what comes to your mind?
Man, honestly, one of the toughest guys I've ever seen in junior hockey, and he could play too.
Yep.
And he could play, but man, he's just never seen a guy go into a fight with a guy like Stephen Peet or Eric mm-hmm. Goddard, and these are mountains of men in junior hockey. I mean, these guys in my era when I played were crazy. And go into that fight, Bugard even, and a smile on his face the entire time. And I don't know if he was scared inside, but I thought he was a hero of mine at the time because we were all like, holy man, this guy is not even human. But he was our captain and a good player. He had a good career too, and it would be nice to see him. Can't wait to see a lot of those guys.
Awesome. Bud, we'll see you on Wednesday.
He wore a goalie jersey.
Vandermeer, he was that big? He wore a goalie jersey?
Wow.
No, he had to fight. You got to have the big jersey. I think he was.
No tactical. Way. Tactical.
He had the old loose sleeves.
Nice. Oh, no but, way. That's,
yeah,
that's a veteran move.
Old
that's
school,
a vet
old
move.
Old school, boys. You can't teach that.
And you can't teach that. Awesome.
Thanks, Colby. We'll see you on Wednesday,
buddy.
Bro.
Yep.
There you go. Oh, that's awesome. Veteran move, buddy. You can't teach that.
Very nice. Hey, breaking coaching news, by the way. Daryl Sutter re-ups with the LA Kings announcement tomorrow. Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. Lisa Dillman broke the story, by the way, from the LA Times. Lisa also reports that the money per year is more than what Todd McClellan is getting in Edmonton. Because coaches know coaches, and they all know what they all make, and that's not a surprise, is it?
Nope. My favorite little game of one-upsmanship that I ever saw.
Mm, go ahead.
Was in Toronto the year that they loaded up with Jason Allison and Eric Lindros. Jason Allison signed for a one-year contract, $1.5 million. And then I think it was like a week later, Eric Lindros, $1.55 million.
Wow.
Just like, I'm worth more than that.
I'm worth more than that. Hey, two coaching vacancies remain. Where does Mike Yeo go? I assume he's getting
one of these
jobs.
I'm just reading Lisa's Twitter right now.
Yeah.
Official announcement is always tomorrow. Here's my question for Daryl Sutter. What does this mean for John Stevens? And is now John Stevens free and clear to negotiate with other teams should they want his services? The belief all along, what I've been led to believe is, Daryl Sutter's coaching his team. When he's done, then this is John Stevens' team. Does this change that?
They're not letting him talk to anybody. The two teams that are both looking for coaches are in their division. He's not going to either one of those teams. And especially not to Anaheim. Are you kidding me? They won't give him permission. I don't think they'll give him permission to talk to anybody in the Pacific.
I just don't know what the deal is with him and Lombardi, though.
No, that's true. Is it still the Ascension?
Because there was that summer where, John Stevens is a hot commodity, but they locked him up. They locked the whole entire coaching staff up and said no, and to the assistants, no, you're not talking to anybody. More so, we're going to give you more than an assistant coach should be paid and is paid, and the caveat is this is going to be your team one day. That's what I've been led to believe.
All right.
Now, does that change with Sutter re-upping? I don't know.
Mike Yeo. Where does he go? Yeo.
Where's he go, Yeo? Jeez. I don't know, Yeo. The one name that's I don't know where he ends up, but the one name that is out there in a strong way
Travis Green,
who is done with Utica. I believe the family's still in California, and I think he's done being that far away from.
If you were looking at Mike Yeo for Calgary, like here's my issue with it. I think he could help them structurally, right, and maybe play a little bit better D. But the rap on him in Minnesota was always that their offensive guys didn't shoot enough, and their offensive guys didn't have the impact that they should have in his system. And to me, the best thing that Calgary has going for him right now is Gaudreau and Monahan, right? So why would you bring in Mike Yeo that could short-circuit two really good offensive players?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of there's a few things that I was told that need to calm down there. One is that era of negativity around the entire organization, and I was told the coach was part of that, but part of the veteran leadership was part of that as well. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of why I thought Bruce Boudreau would be great there.
Well, I heard on pretty good authority that Brian Burke is not a Bruce Boudreau fan, and that's why that never happened. They didn't even get started.
Yeah,
so that's coming down from – that's what happens when, you know, your president of hockey ops is basically a GM, you know? Because you know Brian's signing off on whatever call's made here. It ain't Treliving's hire.
I don't know. I think he gives Treliving a lot of rope. I really do.
But for a coach, though?
I think there will be some strong recommendations. Oh, here's another one. Here's another name that I'll throw out there who probably deserves an apology from certain members of the media, though he'll never get it. Now that pretty much everyone in Edmonton has admitted that the Oilers' issues all along were not coaching and were composition, what about Dallas Eakins?
That'd be interesting.
Look what he did with San Diego, bud.
I like
what he's done with the Gulls, man. I like how this year all of a sudden, you know, Todd McCullough comes in again, no results. Are the kids getting better? Yeah, sure, but we all know what the problems are in Edmonton, and no one says, "Oh yeah, you know what? Maybe we were too hard on Dallas Eakins."
Yeah, it's funny. I was gonna say I like a younger coach. Dude's gonna be 50 next year. Man, time flies, doesn't it? It's crazy,
yeah,
right?
That. Yeah, but he looks like he's 32.
Yeah,
better
exactly.
Shape than everybody else.
Right, exactly.
In hockey.
We're gonna do some listener mail in a second, but we didn't really touch on Tampa all that much. Tampa and the Penguins here in this podcast. I'm picking the Penguins in six. But I do think Tampa is going to be a real tough out, and I think that it could, you know, when they get, they're going to get Stralman back, and the X factor, because he's skating with Black Aces now, is Stamkos. Not sure if he's going to come back or not, but Stralman's going to come back, and that's going to be a huge boost. But boy, you know, like I said, we said to Colby, they win a series with nothing from Malkin, nothing from Sid, and it's hard to believe that's going to be the case in another series.
This is going to sound really insulting. But now finally Tampa gets a test.
Yep,
with all due respect to Detroit, with all due respect to the New York Islanders, this is the of all the teams that are through, who had the easiest go?
Right.
Let me just be honest, everybody. Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and listen, you can't fault them. I mean, you win the games you win, and you play with the hand that you're dealt. And they got Detroit, beat Detroit. They got the Islanders, beat the Islanders. Now's a test. You know, Penguins have been tested. You know, everybody in the West has been tested. You can make the argument Tampa hasn't been tested yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to expect from it because I don't know that I've seen the best out of the Tampa Bay Lightning yet.
That's
true.
Because
who's really pushed them?
That's
true. I don't know. Like in my gut, I say, yeah, I think Pittsburgh wins this series. But in my head, my real answer is probably I don't know.
And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what the line matchups end up being like. Are they going to roll Sid against the triplets? Like, if the Kessel line, which by the way, the nickname is the HBK line, which is the best thing that I've ever heard. I don't know about you.
The Heartbreak Kid.
Yeah, right. How
wow.
Great is that?
Load up the roof.
Are we seeing the transformation of Sidney Crosby into Jonathan Toews? And I don't mean that he's Jonathan Toews and he's going to win a Selkie. I mean, you are asking him to do something different than be the man because you have another line that's kicking ass offensively right now. Can you ask Sid to maybe be a little bit of a different player and take out the triplets and neutralize the triplets?
I would wonder.
He's a pretty good defensive player.
Yeah, no denying it. I would wonder which defense pairing, like the Dumoulin-Letang pairing was real good.
Yeah, outside. Dublin had a couple of brain farts, but he was all right.
So yeah. I'm curious who they would put, which line would they match them up against? Triplets or the Filppula line?
I'd have to really look at what those two lines did defensively.
I would think
triplets so far.
But
I would think triplets too, but you know, that's a pretty, like, you might be able to get more counterattack against the Filppula line.
Dude, it's going to be a fast series.
It's going to be real, you know, well.
It's going to be real freaking quick.
Sid and Gino wake up. It's going to be a real quick series.
No, I don't mean that. I don't mean, like, in terms of, like, this thing's over fast. I just mean, like, the play is going to be up tempo. But That is true. If those two guys start
it is interesting, though, to think about like the dynamics of a series and the narratives in a series and think that Stralman and Stamkos could be a shot of adrenaline to the heart of the Lightning, and then if the Penguins get in trouble, they turn the series over to Fleury. Like, you've got like aces and sleeves in the series for both teams. It's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's true. This one should be a fun one.
All right, couple of you listener tweets at you and me. Winging It in Motown, which is a Red Wings blog, comes with a very important question. Would you lick a random stranger for $100?
Probably not.
Probably not?
Okay, not.
Would
you lick a random stranger for $100?
No, because, well, here's the thing. I'm assuming if it's a random stranger, there's no negotiation beforehand. I'm just running up and licking them, right?
Yeah, like, are they party to the licking?
Are they party to the licking?
Do they know, or do you just have to, like, walk up and lick somebody?
I envision this being a thing where, like, somebody is waiting with $100 for me, and I have to go up to somebody on a subway platform and lick their face.
Lick them, yeah.
In which case, it would have to be more than $100. Have you, like, it was like, five, I'm probably getting punched. Like, $1,000, I'd do it. I think for $1,000.
$1,000, eh? Go lick someone?
Yeah.
So, like, okay, so we're getting together for this draft party in Buffalo.
Right.
I think we're doing a live podcast, too.
We are.
So if I put together $1,000, I could pick the person you'd lick?
Yeah. Well, yeah, sure. If you Kickstarter $1,000 and say, hey, see that guy over there? $1,000
right,
is yours
then
if
let's,
you lick him.
Let's do our podcast party at a Hell's Angel bar and get you to go lick some dude's beard. And we'll see what happens. $1,000, Greg.
I'm just trying to think about if I'll have the time before he punches me to throw $500 in his face.
I was gonna say, and you're not allowed to say, "Hey, dude, I get $1,000 to lick you. I'll cut you in for $500 of it." And we'll...
Yeah, I would need some sort of like some crazy ass Ocean's 11 pre-planning going on to make sure the right people. Like, I'll hire somebody to be in the right place. That's like a heist movie. Hannah wants to know, what do you think? Oh, wait. I'm sorry, not Hannah. What's the one I was going to do? M. Miatz wants to know, if you really, honestly, truthfully believe that Dallas would actually approach the Rangers about Lundqvist.
I think general managers talk to every other general manager about every single player. So it wouldn't be beyond the pale for them to have that conversation between Nil and Gordon.
Hey, man, you happy
with your goaltending? You didn't think anything with Lundqvist? How's he happy there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Tom M. wants to know, assuming Backes will test the UFA market after this year, but with his playoff performance, do you think the Blues will re-sign him? And if so, how much?
Didn't he turn down 6x6?
He might have. I don't know. Is that what you heard?
I have that in the back of my head. Did he turn down 6x6?
If they
I don't know. Doesn't he look like a Boston Bruin to you?
He looks like he's playing for money bags is what it looks like. But I think this, like, if you make the cup final, why would you bring him back? Like, he's giving you everything you need.
And you've already transitioned the team.
Yeah.
Like, they did a rebuild right in front of us.
I think this is last hurrah regardless. And unless he comes back for a ticket that is going to be half of what he's going to get from someone else, I think this is it.
I mean, I disagree.
There's a reason he doesn't have a contract right now, right?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
And finally, Kyle Krejci wants to know, or Krejci? Shit.
Krishnamurti?
Which RFA defenseman is most likely to move this summer? Dumba, Vatanen, Truba, or do all three resign?
Vatanen.
For sure, right?
Vatanen seems to be the guy because they have money to spell out for. I think Vatanen's gone. I think Frederik Andersen's gone.
And finally, because this has been something that's been. Garth Snow did availability today and was talking explicitly about upgrading the. Or maybe just giving Tavares some help on the top line. I think with the assumption that Okposo is going to get signed somewhere else. Here we go. Ready? The real Arby writes in, any chance the Islanders use that cap space to chase Stamkos?
Yeah.
But we go there.
I expect them to be in. I expect them to be in. I expect the Sabres to be in. I expect the Habs to be in.
Would he go to Long Island or Brooklyn more specifically? He's tight with JT. I know that.
Oh, big time.
But is that enough?
Is that enough? I still think Toronto's the play. But I mean, it's not as if it's only going to be one team bidding for him. There's a bunch of teams in that area.
I don't really have a pulse on what's happening in Toronto right now. As far as I know, everybody in the city is watching a Raptors game in a giant field. Go ahead.
You know what would make it real spicy in Florida?
What's that?
If you went to the Panthers.
We've wanted that to happen forever.
I know. It'd be so great.
Here's an idea. I bring up Toronto because I don't know if this has been floated or not. You would know better than I because you are, of course, a driving force on the highly rated Hockey Central program.
Oh, hi,
driving the conversation for the city.
I fill in for Darren. That's what I do.
Has anyone brought up the idea that you signed Stamkos to center Patrick Laine?
No. Not a chance, dude.
Why not?
Tuck it all away. It's Austin Matthews.
But wouldn't that make more sense?
Nope.
Why not?
Because you need your generational centermen. These don't come around very often. Wingers appear all the time. I shouldn't say generational because Austin Matthews is not generational.
A winger that good?
You know how good Austin Matthews is?
But you know how good Laine is?
Fantastic. Yes, I do. They're both outstanding.
We're talking like Ovechkin Kane level.
Here's the problem with that.
What?
You draft before July 1st.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's no problem. They don't exactly. Come on. Okay, Pollyanna.
What are you referring to, sir? That type of behavior doesn't happen in the National Hockey League,
there
I'll
is
have you know.
No gambling in this gambling facility, I'll have you know.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to try to say that with a straight face.
All right. So that's my prediction. Sign Stamkos, draft Laine.
Okay.
And then Austin drops the 2 to the Jets.
Draft Austin Matthews and sign Steven Sam.
Who then trade him to the Coyotes for Domi and Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Nope. Austin Matthews
oh my God.
Drafted 1. And then Patrick Laine is going to Winnipeg.
Oh, my God.
And then Jesse Puljujärvi is going to Columbus.
The one. Okay, so Laine to the Leafs. Laine to the Leafs along with Stamkos.
At one.
Matthews to the Jets, but then they flip Matthews and Trouba for Domi, Duclair, and OEL.
You're insane. You think I need a life? Here's my dream scenario. My dream scenario is somehow Winnipeg ends up with the first pick. Mm-hmm. And gets Austin Matthews from Arizona. And then next year, the Coyotes win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And they take, from Manitoba, Nolan Patrick.
Oh, my God.
So they each get a kid.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were so dismissive, but what if Trouba's Corsi is really good? Like, wouldn't Chayka make that deal?
There's a few other oars in there. I mean, there's Tippett, there's Drummond. What if his Corsi's really good? This guy's going to be like nonstop Corsi jokes with all these guys.
Of course it is. Colby came. Colby started it.
I know.
He came strong with that.
He did come strong with that, too.
Oh,
I'm going to have a lot of fun with him in Memorial Cup.
Eight-Legged Al wants to know, if Stamkos plays 0 playoff games and Tampa Bay Lightning win the cup, does Stamkos accept the cup from Gary Bettman? And what is the impact on him resigning as the captain, they're asking? That's an interesting question. Injured captain probably means the one of the alternates will take the cup, right?
No, he'll come out there and take the cup.
And the impact on him resigning? If they win the
Zero.
Cup, goodbye. Go.
Zero.
Get out of here. We've accomplished everything we need.
But that would be it. Now, would he come out in a suit or a tracksuit?
He'd come out
or
in a Leafs
skates.
Jersey.
Come out. Accept the cup in a Leafs jersey. Oh, I love when your pro wrestling comes out. Oh my God.
I know.
Comes out a Leafs jersey. Accept the cup.
And now, accepting the Stanley Cup from Commissioner Bettman,
Steven Stamkos.
Stamkos,
come get your cup. Lou Lamoriello nodding in the background.
I just want to say that winning the Stanley Cup is just too sweet.
And then he does the little hand thing with like
a Wolfpack there. Yeah, Wolfpack action. Yeah. That's good. Oh, fucking floored. Oh, that's good. Steven Stamkos on a leash. I'll take this back to the Hall of Fame in Toronto.
Toronto. No! My God!
All right. That's the podcast
really
for
good,
this way. I know. For this Thursday. Probably back Monday, I imagine. Well, you got that Red Deer stuff going on.
I got Monday. We're good to go Monday.
All right.
I got Monday, and then I'm leaving for Red Deer on Wednesday, so we got to work on some podcasts.
And we'll figure it out after that. But thanks to Colby Armstrong for a great conversation.
Thanks to Deacon.
I have no sneakers here in the office, obviously.
Deke, give me one more. Let's see if I do it on request. Deke, give me one more. Give me a good bark. If I stare at him long enough, he'll bark again. Deke. Deke, come here. Deke. Now he's wandering over.
What are you going to do?
Hey, buddy.
Thanks to producer Sam. And there you go. Have a great game seven. And once again, Penguins in six. And
who wins tonight? San Jose?
I think San Jose wins because they look so damn good on home ice. They're the much better team on home ice, which is surprising because they were so bad on home ice earlier this year.
They're the worst in the regular season.
Yeah, I think they take game seven tonight, and then we get, as I believe they called it last night, the Western Conference Final of Perpetual Disappointment.
today should be good. There we go. Thanks, Deacon.
There you go, Deacon.
Attaboy. What do you want? Right. He wants to go upstairs. All right. I'm in the basement office.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you.